The following article from our Knowing and Doing Quarterly Journal is brought to you by the C.S. Lewis Institute. Our prayer is that this talk will help to deepen your faith and draw you closer to God.
William Wilberforce and His Circle of Friends by Richard Gathrow. This article originally appeared in the summer 2001 issue of the C.S. Lewis Institute report. Quote, "Unless God has raised you up for this very thing, you will be worn out by the opposition of men and devils. But if God be for you, who can be against you?" End quote. So wrote the aging John Wesley as a word of encouragement to William Wilberforce, the member of Parliament who led the campaign to abolish the slave trade in the latter part of the 18th century and the first part of the 19th century. The cause of abolition is probably the activity for which Wilberforce is best known in history. However, it marks only a central theme to approximately 40 years of public life and activity. Wilberforce's life was filled with one moral and religious project after another. It was a life of unrelenting activity that included tireless organizing, research, persuasion, confrontation, persistence, and pressure upon the British system. In addition to his abolition work, he was consistently involved in church work that included the Church Missionary Society and the sending of missionaries to India and Africa, the British and Foreign Bible Society, the Proclamation Society Against Vice and Immorality, the School Society, the Sunday School Society, the Bettering Society, the Vice Society, and others. His public philanthropic efforts were many, including relieving the suffering of the manufacturing poor and French refugees and foreigners in distress. He made major financial contributions to at least 70 such societies, many of them bearing his name as an officer. History records Wilberforce as having been active in numerous reform movements, which included reform in hospital care, fever institutions, asylums, infirmaries, refugees, and penitentiaries. He supported religious publications and education, especially the schools of Hannah More, a close friend and leading reformer of British education. Much has been written of late about Mr. Wilberforce and his accomplishments. Indeed, he was a great reformer who delighted in people, a strong family man, deeply disciplined in his dedication to Jesus Christ, who overcame illnesses to accomplish what he did. Yet, something is missing in the accolades that he now receives. This missing piece is that he was indeed gifted and deserving of admiration, but he could not have done what he did without his circle of friends. Most of the books and articles written about him throughout history often overlook this critical factor. Wilberforce was part of a unique circle of friends that empowered him, along with Providence, to accomplish what he did. One only needs to read the 400-plus letters to and from Wilberforce, located in the Duke University Library, to begin grasping this insight. For example, it was Wilberforce's circle of friends who shared his deep faith in Christ, particularly Hannah More, who encouraged him to write a manifesto of what had taken place in his life and what he regarded as the essentials of the faith. The lengthy title was A Practical View of the Prevailing Religious System of Professed Christians in the Higher and Middle Classes in This Country, Contrasted with Real Christianity. The book was an immediate success without precedent, with sales of 7,500 copies in the first 6 months. By 1812, 15 editions had been printed in Britain, and 25 in the United States. Translations of the work were printed in French, Dutch, Italian, Spanish, and German. This publication served as an excellent means of expressing conviction in a society whose courtesies of life and forms of society prevented much verbal expression, of religious sentiment. Throughout history, groups of men and women have banded together for the purpose of promoting what they believed to be critical causes. With the defeat of his motion for the abolition in 1789, Wilberforce and his closest friend, Henry Thornton, called together such a group around themselves. The common bond that held this Clapham sect together was the desire to apply their faith in Jesus Christ to personal, social, political, national, and international matters. The group made no claim to be theologians, yet they were people who regarded prayer and Bible study as serious matters. The Clapham group believed that they were representatives of God's kingdom on earth and the faithful stewards of all God had given them. Together, this Clapham Fellowship sought to make the British Empire an instrument of social and moral welfare to all people. Throughout their time together, they remained remarkably committed to these goals. The labels Clapham Sect and the Saints were given to them by others, the latter by members of Parliament. No indication of any desire to give themselves a name was reflected in the correspondence and literature of the members of the group. The term Clapham Sect was not used until later, when the phrase was coined in an 1844 essay by Sir James Stephen. The name originated from the London suburb Clapham, where many of the group members chose to live. The group had many distinctive characteristics. It had no exclusive membership requirements. They gathered together by virtue of their faith in Jesus Christ, love for one another, and out of concern for a variety of moral and religious causes. The spirit of inclusiveness caused Hannah Moore to remark that those who worked together on the slavery issue were like, quote, Noah's Ark, full of beasts, clean and unclean, end quote. The Clapham group's acquaintances were many in number, representing a broad cross-section of Britain's leadership. Wilberforce and his friend's organizational skills and steadfast purpose carried the Saints through many difficulties, but the fact that the Clapham Fellowship knew everyone was very important to the movement's success. Indeed, the Saints loved to entertain and socialize. While Wilberforce and Thornton lived at Palace Yard in London, they kept a virtual open house for members of Parliament. A unique feature of the Clapham sect was the desire to live with one another or in proximity to each other. Always welcome in each other's homes, the Saints were known to be good family people. In spite of the Clapham sect's many crusades, life in many ways was centered around their homes, with family and friendships as priorities. This was undoubtedly one of the group's important sources of vitality. The village of Clapham, the gathering place, was a prosperous suburb located 5 miles from the heart of London. The building of a Christ-centered community at Clapham was the vision of Henry Thornton, a banker, philanthropist, and member of Parliament. He bought Battersea Rise House in 1790. This was eventually to become the headquarters of the Clapham Fellowship. Wilberforce lived with Thornton until Wilberforce's marriage to Barbara Spooner. He and Barbara then moved into Bloomfield, one of the two houses built on the grounds. The other was leased to Charles Grant, another regular member of the Clapham group. What had begun as an informal group of friends drawn together by common concerns eventually took definite shape. To this fellowship, not only came parliamentarians William Wilberforce and Henry Thornton, but the aforementioned Charles Grant and Edward Elliot, brother-in-law to William Pitt. Elliot moved to Clapham with the desire for Wilberforce's spiritual guidance. William Smith, the Unitarian and radical Whig, lived in Clapham and was ultimately drawn into the circle. Abolitionist Granville Sharp was also a resident. James Stephen, Master in Chancery and Member of Parliament from Tralee and East Grinstead, bought a house across the common. Scholar and former slave owner Zachary Macaulay and his wife Selina settled in Clapham upon his return from governing Sierra Leone. Upon retirement as Governor General of India, John Shore, Lord Teignmouth, joined them in 1802. Added to this group was the rector of Clapham Church, John Venn, and a stream of visitors, including Prime Minister William Pitt, Parliamentarian Thomas Babington, Reverend Thomas Gisborne, Dean Isaac Milner of Queen's College, poet and playwright Hannah Moore, and Reverend Charles Simeon of Cambridge. Perhaps this circle of friends can best be remembered by these characteristics. They shared a common commitment to Jesus Christ and a clear sense of calling. They were committed to lifelong friendship, and mutual submission was the norm. Their advocacy was marked by careful research, planning, and strategy. They worshipped both privately and publicly, gathering twice weekly at the Clapham Church. Their friendships were inclusive and focused on the essentials. For example, Wilberforce was a Wesleyan, and his closest friend, Henry Thornton, was a Calvinist. They made family life a clear priority and delighted in each other's marriages and children. They kept the long view on completing projects. Abolition of the slave trade took 20 years. They made no dichotomy between evangelism and social action. Their magazine, The Christian Observer, exemplifies this. Their faith was integral to all of life, family, career, friendship, and more. It was a faith that the younger generation calls 24/7. They talked together of a faith that impacted every part of their lives. There were no compartments. They enabled one another versus trying to have it all. They recognized each other's passions and supported one another in addressing them. The historian Sir Reginald Copeland wrote on the communal strength of the Clapham sect, quote, "It was a remarkable fraternity, remarkable above all else, perhaps, in its closeness, its affinity. It not only lived, for the most part, in one little village, it had one character, one mind, one way of life. They were mostly rich, living in large, roomy houses, but they all were generous givers to the poor. Thornton, indeed, gave away as much as 6/7 of his income till he married, and after that, at least a third of it. They could mostly have been of leisure, but they all devoted their lives to public service. They were what Wilberforce meant by true Christians." End quote. The love of God was the very center of the group's reason for being together, and what became their legacy. From this love sprang a group that changed history. May there be many such associations that come to pass in these days as we enter the new millennium.
Thank you for listening. The C.S. Lewis Institute endeavors to develop disciples who will articulate, defend, and live their faith in Christ in personal and public life. This takes the form of discipleship programs, area-wide conferences and seminars, pastor fellowships, and resources in print and on the web. For more information about the C.S. Lewis Institute, or to support this ministry, please visit our website at www.cslewisinstitute.org.